Welcome to Legal Talk. I'm John Mitchell, and today we're uncovering the legal insights and strategies that help you protect what matters most. You're watching Now Media Television.
Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome to Legal Talk. I am John Mitchell, host of the show. I am a tax attorney here in the beautiful city of Houston, Texas, and we are coming at you today with some really good stuff. I got a great show in store, right? So this is Legal Talk, where I break down legal and business issues that matter most to small business owners. So today, I am privileged, I'm honored, I am awestruck to be in the presence of the great Dog Wick, who is a very seasoned business coach. He's spent many years now helping companies move from founder-driven chaos to real structure and real freedom and real growth. Doug has worked with hundreds of small and mid-sized businesses, and today, we're talking about some of the most common risks that I see in business when the company cannot function without the owner. Doug, welcome to the big show, man. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here. Great to see you, John, and great to be a part of it.
Absolutely, my friend. Thanks so much for being with us. And let's just go ahead and jump right in. So we're talking a little bit about the problem of being a business, being overly dependent on the owner. And I remember, man, it's been said to me before, by a very wise gentleman I knew a couple of years back. And he said, John, if you business owners got to realize, man, if the business depends on you and can't function without you, you don't own a business. You own a very fancy job, right? It's J-O-B, man. You got to be there. Clock in, clock out. If you're not there, business doesn't function. And that is a trap that we do not want to fall in. So what is, Doug, the first sign that a business has become too dependent on its owner?
Well, I think the first sign is really stress. And that's only if the owner is even aware that they're under stress, because we can get addicted to stress. And so, the patterns that are stress are not even maybe an awareness factor for the owner, because they're just doing it. I was when I first started in coaching back in 1998, I coached small businesses primarily. And the coaching we did was based on Michael Gerber's book. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it was called The E-Myth Revisited, which is why most small businesses don't work and what to do about it. And most business owners are working for the worst boss they can imagine, which is themselves, right? Because when we're critical of others, it's because we are really being critical of ourselves. And as our own boss, I think we find that we never get enough done. We don't do it right or to the highest standards. And few individuals have I'd call it the required awareness to balance, to take a breath and to understand that there's a big picture that they are moving toward. And in fact, I think when most small business owners get this idea of starting a business, they have this envisioned future that they're intending to move toward. And yet what happens when you get into the work of doing the business, you get focused on the doing it part, and you lose sight of that vision. I know I was, I've been a small business owner for, the last 30, 35 years. And what happens is in the work of the business, you get focused on the tasks and getting things done, and you forget what your vision is, and you don't work at working toward that vision of the business. And unless you create that vision and have it documented, I think you're going to stray, and you're going to stay in stress mode. And in stress mode, because you're either in the future or the envisioned future, that you just keep repeating the same thing over and over, and you never take the time to look at where you want to go, actually, and where your vision is, right?
Right. Hey, understood, man. You are preaching to the choir right here, man, because I've also been, you know, business owner for many, you know, many years now, more than I'll disclose here, you know. Gotta keep some mystery and things, right? But you know, I know how it is. You can get really wrapped up into the day-to-day of just doing, right? And which leads me to my next question, right? So business owners out there, you know, can make that mistake of mistaking personal effort for, you know, for an actual business model. You know, how do you see that play out, you know, boots on the ground wise?
Well, in most cases, most of us, I'm going to guess, create to-do lists or, you know, a task orientation. And because of that, we get focused on the task and there's all these tasks that we have to do. But if you ask yourself, and this is a critical question. It comes from a book, The One Thing, which is, what's the one thing I can do such that by doing it, everything else would be easier or unnecessary? And if you have created an envisioned future, where are we going? And you answer that question in that perspective, you're going to keep yourself in tune every day to what I really should be focused on rather than a list of tasks. Because we all feel really good, you know, checking off these things that we're doing, but taking the mail to the post office or picking up something at the post office or writing a check is not necessarily something that has to be the priority for the day. It's what's going to get you toward that vision that you have. And that should be the most important thing every day. And the book, you can see it in the background here. It's got the big one written on it. He talks about taking 4 hours every day and dedicating it to that one thing. What's that one thing that you can do such that by doing it, everything would be easier or unnecessary? And I think most business owners lose sight of that vision and get focused on my task list. Here's the top 5 or 6 things that I need to do, or the top 13 or 15 or whatever it is, rather than what's the one thing that's going to get me toward that vision I created. And that vision I want.
Right. You know, the one thing, man, I read that a few years back. That has been one of my favorite, you know, business oriented type books, right? Because I'm one of those guys that, you know, I walk into the office in the morning and, you know, I got a list of maybe 20 things, you know, that I could do today, right? And so I always try to, you know, sit down and prioritize and say, okay, what thing am I going to do today that's going to cause the biggest impact on my business, right? And it kind of work down from there, because you're right. You can get, you know, you can get caught up going to the post office, or, you know what, I used to fall into the bad habit of, you know, running down to Office Depot. Oh my God, why? I had to pick up a new box of pens, man. What do I got to do? I need pens. Office won't run without it. And so all of a sudden now you've been 2 hours at Office Depot and you're, you know, measuring the new chairs and, oh my God, wouldn't this new table look nice over in the corner? And, you know, and you've wasted a good chunk of your day down at Office Depot because you went down there for, you know, pick up one or two little things, right? You needed a box of paper clips, you walk out with a full buggy, right? And so, you know, the one thing, I've found that to be a wonderful business book, and I would recommend it, you know, to people out there, right? So yeah. What do you say when you, it's because you do a lot of business consulting, I don't, right? But what would you say starts breaking down first, right? Like the processes break in a business when the owner is carrying too much of the company all by themselves?
Yeah, you know, I'll be a little bit redundant here, but I think the first system that someone should create, and it's actually this, again, I don't know if most owners know they need this or if they're aware how important this is. You can, if you haven't created a vision of what your business is going to look like in 5, 7, 20 years, whatever it is, how can you possibly convey to the people that work for you or even to yourself what is most important and where are we going? You can't expect people to understand what the expectations are or to act without any clear, defined systems or clarity on what their job is if you don't give them, hey, this is where we're going. We're going to be a $10 million business or a $20 million or $30 million business. We're going to have offices in, you know, five states, whatever it might be. So they get that understanding of this is where we're going. And that's critical for yourself as well. So I would say the first system that breaks down is the owner not having a clear vision of where he's going or she's going and what it's going to look like when it gets there. And therefore, this is what I need to be focused on because every day I need to be doing something that's getting me toward that vision of where I'm going.
Right. Understood. Oh, my goodness. So would you say, we're just going to close out the, the segment and go to a quick commercial break really, really quickly. But what would you, one last question, what would you say is like the one thing that people can focus on to get started down that right and correct path? What would you say?
Well, find out, there's a couple of books I'd recommend, but in essence, it's Cameron Harold has a book, I think it's called Double Vision. And it talks about creating that vision. What's your clear vision of where you want to be in 10 years, in 15 years? If you can do that and be clear about it for yourself and then share it with your people, about the time you get sick of saying it, they're first getting it. So it's important that you repeat it a lot. And that it's in, and it's clearly really, really important that you have that clear vision because that's going to get you toward not having the business more dependent upon you because ultimately that's what you want. You want to be free of your business. And we'll talk about that more to come, I'm sure.
Yes, sir, we sure will. But first, let's go ahead and go to a really quick commercial break. We can get the folks out there in the audience a chance to go to the fridge, stretch their legs, grab the hot or cold beverage of their choice, and come right back and be with us because I am with the one, the only extraordinary Doug Wick, business coach extraordinaire. Oh, my goodness, we got some good stuff coming up. So come right back and be with us. Don't miss a single minute of Legal Talk. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back. We'll be right back with more practical, real-world legal guidance. This is Legal Talk on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm John Mitchell, and you're watching Legal Talk on Now Media Television. Let's continue the conversation.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back to Legal Talk. Thank you so much out there in the audience for being with us. By the way, anybody out there watching the show, I love to receive feedback, email, attorneymitchell@pm.me. Just not plugging myself, but just in case you folks out there want to weigh in and, talk about future things that you might want to see on the show, love to hear from the audience out there. And that's always a real treat for me to get an email from folks out there who have enjoyed the show. So if you enjoy the show, feel free to shoot me an email. So as I said, welcome back to Legal Talk. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media favorite live or on demand anytime you like. You can download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. If you're on the move, go ahead and catch that podcast version on www.nowmedia.tv. I am back now with Doug Wick, and we're looking at what really protects small businesses when growth starts to put pressure on operations, right? So I want to make it clear that systems are not just about efficiency and scale. They protect other things like, let's say, some consistency, accountability, delegations, and all that good stuff, right? So what would you say, Doug, why do so many business owners resist systems even when they know that the business needs them?
Well, I've got a long maybe answer to this, but most owners probably got into the position they did by being a bit of a maverick, enjoying their independence. And I think it's easy to feel that systems are restrictive from that perspective. So I'd like to share a story about a lesson I learned when I first got into management, which is based on a similar caveat to what Michael Gerber's statement in that book, The E-Myth Revisited, was, which is people are unmanageable. And I remember my first year, I was a sales manager in a radio station. You know, I had very few systems and structure. And part of it was because I think I was rebelling a little bit against the previous sales manager I had. He had long, unstructured sales meetings on Saturday and had certain things that he did. And I just went, I don't need those. I don't need to, people can be successful on their own, because I was, you know, I got to be a good salesperson, and that's why they made me a sales manager. But I realized very shortly at that very first year, I almost got fired my first year, because the sales manager sat me down. He said, Doug, you know, you're too good to be, that you're going to fail here. You can go somewhere else and fail. And so then that very next year, the second year as a sales manager, I realized I needed to get my people to manage themselves. So I created what I would call my, I guess, a sales management system, which was, you know, I created sales meetings and so forth. But probably the most important thing was to bring my salespeople in a one-on-one meeting. I would ask them to write down, to have a 3x5 card. On one side, they wrote down what their goals were that they wanted to achieve. And then the other side, I asked them to write down the activities that they'd have to do in order to achieve that goal. And I don't know if you're familiar with Atomic Habits, but James Clear mentions, we don't rise to the level of our goals, we fall to the level of our systems. So this gave them a system that was based on what they wanted to achieve and their system, in essence, the activities they needed to do in order to achieve it. And every day of the week when I would meet with them, they would come in, I'd ask them to, you know, always bring their 3x5 card in, and I'd tell them, turn it over. Are you making your 15 calls a day? Are you presenting $50,000 a week? Are you closing 20%? And most of the time, I'd say 50% of the time, they weren't doing that. And they would, because they had created that activity in order to reach their goal, they immediately realized, no, I'm not doing those things. And I want to achieve that goal. And they would leave going, Doug, I'm going to work at it. I'm going to come back in. And the next week they probably would, but a couple of weeks later, they'd probably be back to their, you know, old habits. But I had them create a system that would keep them on track. And that was, you know, totally different what I tried to do the first year, primarily because I felt that those systems, or that idea of a system, was I can do this on my own. I'm independent enough. I'm able to do that. And I think most people feel that way, but they don't realize that if system isn't restrictive, it really gives you the freedom to focus on other things and get the results you want.
Man, oh man, Doug, I gotta say, man, that is some absolute expert ninja level management right there, because what you've done, and I want to kind of draw the audience's attention to this, right? What you've done by the 3x5 cards and all that, you kind of gave people ownership, right? So they came up with these goals, they wrote them down, they wrote what they need to do to make it happen, and now it's on them to know whether they, whether they did the activities or didn't do the activities. Very clear, black and white, no room for excuses right there, right? So I think, that gives them ownership. It gives them some kind of a skin in the game. And I think that's the way that you're going to, drive success. So that's creating systems that help you manage people by having the people manage themselves. And I absolutely love it. I not only applaud that, I give it a standing ovation, right? So let me ask you this, though. What kinds of problems in particular have you seen or do you think that systems can prevent before they become before they turn into expensive mistakes?
Well, just like what the example I gave you, when you don't have a system, like for my salespeople, the salespeople are in a unique position, I believe, to be able to create their own systems. But without that system, they're flying by the seat of their pants. They're in essence, as we say in the coaching business, hope is not a strategy. And these people are, you know, when you're flying on hope alone without a system to guide you in the direction that you want to go, you're just really resting on the hope that things are going to happen. And as you know, the universe rewards action. And unless you're taking action toward that goal in some manner, you're not going to achieve what you want to achieve. And so I think systems are really are very, very helpful at keeping you focused on the outcome that you want. Again, the goal isn't as important as the system behind it to achieve it. That concept I just stated, you know, we don't rise to the level of our goals, we fall to the level of our systems. So if you have a good system, you're gonna maintain that level of achievement necessary to reach the goal that you want.
Man, oh man, that is important stuff right there. And I'll tell you, man, like I said, I've been a business owner myself for, you know, many, many years, going into decades, by the way. So one of the things that I've always had not trouble with, but, you know, one of the big humps there's always to jump over is when you find yourself as a business owner trying to either onboard somebody new or handing off some kind of responsibility. You're reshuffling, you know, now Jenny's going to take care of accounts receivable and, you know, Bob's going to do HR or whatever it may be, right? So when you're shuffling roles around, and you're changing responsibilities or maybe bringing in somebody new, what would you say the roles that systems play when you're going through those kinds of changes?
Well, specifically in those kind of changes, we should have a job description for everyone. And the job description should have the systems referred to that people follow. So if I can't remember what name you mentioned, but if Sally's going to take over accounts receivable, there should be a system that she can go into. And if all your systems are created the same way, then she's very familiar with, okay, this is how we do it here. This is the system we follow. And here's when, you know, here's when I take the initial step. After 30 days, if they haven't paid, I make my first call. A week later, I make another call. And you send an email. And all of that should be labeled. I remember working with I think it was an oil company. And that was one of the first things we did was he was having problems with accounts receivable. And he created a flow chart. He created the, the system step by step. And immediately he changed that. I was working with started to get better results. I remember one of my clients said, I don't have enough cash flow to work with you. So the very first thing we did when we got into his business was we created a system to help him collect receivables. And one of the things we discovered was that his billing process is the invoices were due 10 days after they were, you know, issued at the first of the month. Well, his people weren't even following up until like 45 days later when they were late. So immediately changing that made the people that he was that was purchasing his product made them aware, oh, we've got to pay that earlier. And he never had a cash flow problem after that. It was that quick that it solved that problem of getting people, because it wasn't a matter of not having the money or the revenue. It was a matter of that they were just paying them late. And all he needed to do was to put a little pressure on that, create a little bit of a awareness with his customers, and it changed it immediately.
I know this firsthand, man. I've been on both sides of that accounts receivable, accounts payable, that line in the sand, right? And I know that as a business owner, you wear many hats and, it's very easy to just kind of fall into a holy crap. You blink and 2 weeks have gone by and you got, oh my God, I got this invoice I got to pay. And so, I've been on both sides of that, my friend. So, all right. So let's just, before we go to a quick commercial break, let me ask you this, Doug. So if folks out there want to hire Doug Wick, business coach extraordinaire, how would they go about finding you?
I've got a blog. I'm creating a new website that's not done, but it closed soon. It'll be done probably in another 3-4 weeks. UnbelievableCoach.com will probably be the best place. But I'm also at strategicdiscipline.positioningsystems.com. That's where my blog is. They can also reach me at dwick@positioningsystems.com. And 319-393-2565 is my phone number if they want to reach out and call me by phone.
Excellent, my friend. Well, thanks very much for that good and valuable contact information. I'm sure people are going to be dialing that phone or firing up that email to get in touch with you. And we will go ahead and take a quick little break. You know, stretch your legs, get the hot or cold beverage of your choice. Come right back because we are going to have segment number 3 with Doug Wick right after these messages.
We'll be right back. We'll be right back with more practical, real-world legal guidance. This is Legal Talk on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm John Mitchell, and you're watching Legal Talk on Now Media Television. Let's continue the conversation.
All right, everybody. Oh, my goodness. Time flies when you're having fun, and we are certainly having a blast here with Doug Wick, a business coach extraordinaire. Oh, my God. We're just chock full of good, solid information for everybody out there. Thank you so much, Doug, for being with us. And thank you to the audience for being with us. We really appreciate you. Love to, you know, hear any feedback that you got for us. And so, Doug, let me ask you this, because a lot of business owners and a lot of businesses say that they want discipline, right? But it's easier said than done. So when you say strategic discipline, what does that actually mean for a small business owner, boots on the ground in the real world, IRL, like the kids say today?
So strategic discipline is the intent of that long-term vision that you have. You got to start there. And then the strategic discipline really means the system that fundamentally moves you toward that. It's a series of meetings, starting with a long-term vision for your business, 3 to 5 years, a annual vision, create an annual plan, and then quarterly meetings, weekly meetings, monthly meetings, and daily huddles in order to achieve that. So that discipline is starting out with that vision, 3 to 5 years, an annual vision, and then meeting quarterly, monthly, and weekly with the idea of having quarterly goals. And every weekly meeting is, are we staying on track? Do we have measurements? What's our accountability? So we are maintaining that long-term vision with the view of the short weekly goal, quarterly goal, which automatically then fits into the annual goal, which the annual goal is based on where do we want to be in 3 to 5 years. So that's the intention. And then the systems are all developed in order to achieve where you want to be with that annual goal and that long-term 3 to 5 year goal.
Well, that is excellent, man. That is aspirational, too. And so, you know, sometimes things in business and in life in general, right, can be easier said than done. And so what kind of words of wisdom can you offer us on why is it that so many businesses, you know, they go out, they're ambitious, they set those priorities, and then they still somehow fail to execute consistently?
Yeah, and I think, first of all, they might have too many goals. Go back to, you know, the book back there, one thing. Decide what it is. One thing for the year, one thing for the quarter. That's a primary. So you might have too many goals. Your goals themselves might be too ambitious or maybe not. Are they possible in that 13 weeks? Because a lot of times people don't take the time to go, here's what we want to do. We want to go from 2 leads a week to 50. Well, that's unreasonable to expect. So make sure your goals are attainable. And then the other thing I think most important is when you set a goal, do you have the system to measure it and to make sure you're going to achieve it. Because again, that idea of we don't rise to the level of our goals, we fall to the level of our systems. And if you're going to create a goal, you have to have what activities, what actions am I going to take week by week? If it's a 13-week goal, how am I going to get there? How am I going to go from 2 leads to maybe 4 leads a week? And consequently, if you're closing 50%, you'll get to 2 sales every week. How do we get that number of 2 leads or 4 leads or 5 leads, whatever we're looking at to achieve our goal? How do we increase that? We've got to have a system, a group of activities. Maybe it's more mentions on Facebook, LinkedIn, just making calls out in the community. Instead of making 10 calls a day, you're making 15 calls a day. But something to increase and activities to measure, because the activities will then lead to the outcome that you're looking for. If you're making 10 and you're getting 2, 15, you ought to get 3. And that just would make sense. Increasing those numbers and measuring that will get you the results. But if you're not doing that, you're not going to hit your priorities.
It's just a numbers game, isn't it? Right. Like, I remember, like I said, I've raised 5 teenagers. And so, you know, of course, you eventually have the talk about girls and stuff. And you know, I used to tell my, you know, tell my sons this, and I hope they don't chop this out of the program. But I used to tell my sons, you're never going to get 10 girls to go out with you by asking one. But you might at least get one to go out with you if you ask 10. Right. So sales is the same kind of, you know, same kind of thing, right? Now, as a business owner, I don't want, right? I'm not looking for having my staff to, you know, walk around in fear and loathing. Oh my God, John's here. You know, what's going to complain about today, right? Like, but you set these goals and you got to have some kind of a system for accountability, right? To kind of take ownership of those goals and make sure that, you know, the business is moving forward like it's supposed to, right? But yet I don't want people walking on eggshells around me. I don't want my team to be stressed out or burned out. So what does healthy accountability actually look like, you know, in a business without creating any kind of fear or burnout in the team?
Well, you know, it requires a number of systems, starting with how do we hire here? What's that look like? Do you give people the expectations? When you hire them, one of the things I think people miss when you actually hire someone and you have laid out, here's the job description, here's the accountabilities, here's the measurements that you need to achieve. When you hire them, if you use that system, that job summary scorecard is what we call it, to hire them, did you sit them down and say, John, you remember the job summary scorecard? Here's the reasons why I hired you. Here's the reasons why I felt you could do this job. And then making them accountable to achieve those accountabilities, those activities that you have spelled out in their job description, being clear about it, setting and having a dashboard perhaps for having them. One of the disciplines that I got from Good to Great was, he calls this, Jim Collins calls this discipline number 2. When you need to make a people change, he said, the moment that you feel you need to tightly manage someone, you've made a hiring mistake. The best people don't need to be managed. And clearly, if you give them expectations, you give them accountabilities, you tell them what needs to be done, most people can follow that, especially if you have systems, and achieve the goals that you've laid out for them. And if you have to manage them, it's a good indication you probably made a mistake in hiring them in the first place.
Yes, indeed. I mean, I've had that come up, right? Like not everybody is a good fit for every job, right? And that doesn't mean that they're bad people or anything like that. It just, you know, like not everybody has the same temperament. Not everybody has the same, you know, abilities. And so you got to make sure that you got the right people in the right spot and you got the right systems in place so that people can actually go out and be successful in what they're going to do. Now, one of the things that I remember from many times in my life, it's been said to me about the KISS principle: keep it simple, stupid, right? So if we're going to keep things simple, like for example, my next question is about a simple operating rhythm. So how would you say that keeping a simple operating rhythm in a business, how's that going to help the business to stay focused and be proactive and not quite so reactive?
I'll sum it up in a couple ways. First of all, it's following that meeting rhythm: daily huddles, weekly meetings with the leadership team, monthly meetings, quarterly meetings, annual meetings, and that where we look at the next year and we look at our 3 to 5 year goal. I think I could sum it up with people who are clear about what's expected of them, clear about the vision of the company, and clear about how to act in order to produce the results that's necessary.
Right. Well, those are very important words right there. Word to the wise, right? So, and we definitely have a wise man in Doug here on the program, helping everybody out with some good, some good information brought to the table. So we're going to go ahead and take another quick break, and we're going to go commercials, and we'll come right back and we'll talk about coaching owners, business owners, through growth and complexity right after this.
We'll be right back with more practical, real-world legal guidance. This is Legal Talk on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm John Mitchell, and you're watching Legal Talk on Now Media Television. Let's continue the conversation.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Legal Talk. I am your host, John Mitchell, tax attorney extraordinaire here in the Houston area, and we are so happy to have everybody with us. It's a great privilege. It's been an absolute pleasure having Doug Wick with us. He is a business coach, an expert in all things business, and so we are very pleased to have him and very pleased to have the audience. And you folks out there can stay connected to this show and every Now Media TV favorite live or on demand anytime you like by downloading the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS, and you can unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. Two for one, right? Can't do better than that. So if you're on the move, also you can catch us on the podcast version at www.nowmedia.tv. Welcome back to the big show, Doug.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we want to shut down the last segment of this by talking about what really changes when a company grows. So not just the business, but also the owner. So it's a process, right, for everybody. So we're going to, explore some patterns that Doug might have seen coaching many companies through different stages of growth. And I want this to feel like a kind of a reflective and practical, honest reflection of what growing a business is like and what it's all about, what works, what doesn't work. You got to go out with the old and in with the new sometimes when you're going through that cycle of growth. So all of that said, right, let me ask you this. After working with so many companies, what is the most common mistake that you would say that owners, business owners make when growth starts to accelerate?
And I think it becomes people issues, obviously, egos, and primarily I'd call it not being recognized or feeling restricted or not feeling appreciated. We do, when we coach people in the quarterly meetings, one of the things that we do in the very first segment that starts the meeting is a look back at what we actually achieved this past quarter. And each leader in the leadership group highlights things that their people or their team achieved. A lot of times we get so addicted or compelled by the goal that we're going to, we never look back and look at where we've been. Al McGuire, I'm not sure many people are aware of him, but he's was the coach at Marquette, and we were fortunate when I was in radio to get him to speak at our sportscasters banquet immediately after his team had won the NCAA championship team. And he said, I'll always remember this. He said, it's really hard to appreciate the view from the top of the mountain if you've never been to the valley. And so often we're so focused on where we're going and what we want to achieve, we don't take any time to appreciate what we've achieved and the people primarily that have helped us get there. And so I would say that's a problem that shows up again and again, because we're striving to get someplace, we're growing, 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 and we never go, wow, look at what you did, John. Look at how much you've accomplished. Look at where you were 2 years ago or a quarter ago, 90 days ago, and what you and your team accomplished. That just keeps people involved in the game. And a lot of times, I think Napoleon said, the soldiers will die for medals more than anything else, which is, seems odd, but they're willing to put their life on the line when they're appreciated and recognized.
Well, yeah, look, I remember that quote from Napoleon also. I don't know if you're familiar with former Marine Corps colonel or lieutenant colonel. Sorry if I'm getting that wrong, but Smedley Butler. And he said, men crave recognition. They crave medals, right? And like you said, yep. more than anything else. And it's very important. And I remember reading years ago in a book, I think it might have been The 1 Minute Manager. And they made a point to say, look, whenever you're managing people, be sure to let me see if I'm saying this right. So you criticize people privately, but you praise them publicly. Right? I think I'm getting that right. So that's very important. It dovetails right in with what you were saying there. So that's awfully good, good information.
If I can add, John, somewhere I heard that people need 5 compliments to 1 criticism, and you should always, that's just the ratio that you need to keep in mind, and most businesses are run almost the opposite, 5 criticisms to 1, compliment.
Well, that is something that I know I can do better, and I'm gonna put that in practice. I promise you today, I'm gonna go back to my office and find find some good things to praise about the staff over there. They're over there working hard, trudging through mountains of paperwork while I get to come over here and chat on camera with interesting folks. So go back and recognize them, I think is the point of the day, right? So let me ask you this next question. Why do smart and capable business owners, right? People are smart, they're capable, but yet they still struggle to let go of those old habits. Why do you think that is?
The new coaching platform that I'm doing is called Neuro Change Solutions. It's based on a book Dr. Joe Dispenza wrote, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, which was very influential in my life when I had cancer in 2012. But most people, whether we realize it or not, we're living in the past. And most people don't struggle due to their capability. They struggle because their thoughts, their emotions, and behaviors are neurologically conditioned to repeat the same results. We are stuck because our bodies, how many times have you maybe said, hey, I'm going to exercise today, but you sit down at the end of the day and you don't have the energy to get up. And yet if you just got up and stood up, you'd be on the way toward doing something. That's, every night after work, I have a habit of taking about a 2-3 mile walk. And I don't even think about it, because if I thought about it, I'd probably come up with an excuse not to do it. And so again, it's our beliefs, our memories, they rule our bodies and therefore our mind, because our mind is always going to say, when we try something new, you can do it tomorrow. You can do it. Nobody else is doing it. Or that this is what, what your wife would say about that. Why are you doing that? And so it's difficult to break that hold on the past, because we're prone to repeat the past. And so we're really, in many cases, addicted to our current behavior. And the only way to break that pattern is new information, making new choices, having new thoughts, then taking those actions and creating new experiences, and then creating new memories, which will then influence our new thoughts. And that's the whole concept of change your mind, create new results, which I coach now, which is to get us out of those patterns. Our bodies are making us rule our mind and create change and sustain it.
Right, right. Easy to create, not always easy to sustain. So, you know, word to the wise, right? So good stuff, man. Good stuff. All right. So now there comes a time, okay, let me shift gears just a little bit. There comes a time when, you know, a business is ready to kind of move on to the next level, right? It might be opening another location, or it might be, you know, adding a new line of business, whatever it may be, right? So whenever a company is ready to move on to that next level, in your experience, what would you say that you've seen over the years? What do you see change first? What's that canary in the coal mine? How do you know the company's ready to move forward?
Well, almost always, I think it's just a new mindset, all right? It's a new thought. And here's where the routine or the system sometimes can, and maybe it's more like, this is how we do it here, becomes a restriction. Because the thought of opening another branch means everybody's going to have to work harder. So you got to sell that concept of why. Why are we going to do this, and what's the benefit for them? I think most times what happens when we are going to make change, we maybe make that change either arbitrarily, we don't get feedback from everybody else, we don't get them involved, the people that are going to, we need their commitment, we need their support in order to do that. And so when that happens, the people are used to doing their routine, that the body is ruling the mind again. And unless we start talking about it, we give them, it's almost got to come, hey, how can we grow this business? What can we do? Get your people involved in that process. Get them involved in the idea. We're going to open a new location. We're going to create something new. We're going to add a new product. If you can get them involved in the process, constantly be asking them for their ideas on how we can improve. What do we need to do to improve here? That mindset alone helps the business scale, because now your people are contributing to your growth by offering you ideas. You don't have to accept any of them. In fact, in many cases, all you need to do is to listen to them. Maybe it's 1 out of 10 of their ideas that'll work. But if they can be involved in that mindset, those new thoughts will create new choices. They'll create new actions. And those will lead to new experiences, which will, again, create new emotions, which will change and get them to contribute, because now their body is agreeing with their mind. I was involved in that. That was my idea. That's what the company did because I suggested this. And boy, that's going to have a powerful impact on your business, because your people now are involved and feeling like they're helping the business grow.
Well, I can't think of a better way to end our big show than on that, right? Keep people involved, have some ownership, and that's going to really take things to the next level. Doug, thanks so much for being on Legal Talk with us. We really appreciate all the good information that you brought for the audience today. Really appreciate it, and thanks so much for being with us. Why don't you go ahead and close us out by telling us one more time, how could people get in touch with Doug if they want to do so?
Again, they can find me on my blog, strategicdiscipline.positioningsystems.com. They can email me at dwick@positioningsystems.com, or my phone number is 319-393-2565. Coming soon will be my new website, unbelievablecoach.com, probably by beginning of May. Thank you.
Excellent, sir. Well, thanks very much. And thank you, audience, for being with us. We will be back next time with another show of Legal Talk. I'm your host, John Mitchell, and bidding you a fond farewell until next time.